government regains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way, no shortcut.
And I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows, instead of being kept in the dark by a policy of ditto.
The last time that Congress held a hearing addressing the extraterrestrial issue was 1968, 44 years of sightings ago. In those 4.5 decades, hundreds of thousands of new sightings have taken place. Government agency witnesses have come forward. Media coverage has expanded. Hundreds of documentaries have been produced. Thousands of books have been written. And yet the United States Congress has remained silent. So for a period of 5 days, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 12 blocks from the Congress of the United States, we're going to conduct a citizen hearing on disclosure of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. 40 to 50 witnesses of high rank and station, from military, from agencies, possibly from intelligence services, along with the top researchers in the world, will give 30 hours of testimony to 5 former members of the United States Congress.
So maybe the citizens' hearing has a chance to try to leverage open some of the truth about the fact that we're not alone in this universe, that we might actually begin to look at what we really are, what the true history of this planet is, and that might be what gets us into a future without self-destruction.
The motto of the citizen hearing is, if Congress won't do its job, the people will.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, the countdown to disclosure. I'm very happy to have you back here with me today. As most of you know, I was gone over the weekend, and I just got back late night before last. And yesterday I had read this to you from the citizenshearing.org website. Rachel Maddow, one of the smartest people working in television news today, devoted a full segment of her April 12th MSNBC program to Paradigm Research Group's Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, the first PRG disclosure petition to the White House and the White House petition response. It is quite notable that while indulging in the customary, almost required tongue-in-cheek, this very savvy woman included in this segment every single key point PRG is trying to make about the truth embargo and the current government status on the issue. Thank you, Rachel. So now what I'd like to do is I'd like to play this for you in case you missed it. Thank you.
When I look at my phone, I see the place where I keep home things, work things, everything.
Just a little ad
but
here.
But my girls see a shiny toy. Kids Corner keeps the apps I pick for them separate from my email and other important stuff. It's great when we're both right. I'm Jessica, and this is my Windows phone.
Here we go.
Happy Friday. You know those We the People petitions at the White House? You get 5,000 people to sign an online petition, then the White House says it will respond to the issue that you brought up. They must respond if you get 5,000 signatures. It's an awesome idea, right? It's a heart in the right place kind of stuff. But eventually that meant that the seat of power in the most powerful country on earth, the White House, was coming within 1,000 signatures of having to answer the request to, quote, nationalize the Twinkie industry. When that happens, it maybe it's time to raise the bar in terms of things they must respond to. So even though they started initially with a 5,000 signature plan, the White House eventually upped the threshold to 25,000 signatures. That still was not high-end enough to filter out stuff like this. Invite Neil Bortz to spend an hour talking with the president about tax reform. Okay, Google Neil Bortz. Come on, America. The president is busy. So the threshold started at 5,000, then it went to 25,000. That couldn't clear the Bortz hurdle. Now you have to get 100,000 signatures on your petition for the White House to respond to it. But it was back in the heady old days of only 5,000 signatures that the White House did have to respond to this question. Quote, we, the undersigned, strongly urge the President of the United States to formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race and immediately release into the public domain all files from all agencies and military services relevant to this phenomenon. That petition got more than 12,000 signatures, and this was the White House response from the Office of Science and Technology Policy. It's actually very considerate and good. Listen to this. The U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race. In addition, there's no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public's eye. Many scientists and mathematicians have looked with a statistical mindset at the question of whether life likely exists beyond Earth, and have come to the conclusion that the odds are pretty high, that somewhere among the trillions and trillions of stars in the universe, there is a planet other than ours that is home to life. Many have also noted, however, that the odds of us making contact with any of them, especially any intelligent ones, are extremely small given the distances involved. But that's all statistics and speculation. The fact is, we have no credible evidence of extraterrestrial presence here on Earth. Asked. And answered, right? No, of course not. Since the White House will not give them the truth that they know is out there, the group behind that petition is now turning to another branch of government to uncover the real evidence. Sort of. They're sort of approaching Congress, but, well, they've decided to hold a fake congressional hearing. A five-day marathon hearing involving testimony from dozens of witnesses, witnesses questioned by former members of Congress in a room at the National Press Club that has been configured to resemble a Senate hearing room. There will be press sections and an audience area and witness and committee tables, just like the real thing, except it's fake. They're calling it a citizen hearing on disclosure. And they've created like a movie trailer for it. Look.
I think it's time to open the books. Questions that have remained in the dark, question of government investigations of UFOs.
Stop the music, Governor. Did you say the United States government is covering up a history of a UFO sighting in your state?
It is now time to put away this embargo of truth about the alien presence.
They don't produce documents, Chris. They should just get it all out.
We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law.
It's no longer about lights in the sky. It's about lies on the ground.
Release the X-Files! Embargo of truth about the alien presence. You're going down. So that's the fake hearing. Over 5 days of testimony, dozens of witnesses will talk about strange things they say they have witnessed. They will give their testimony to a panel of members of Congress, former members of Congress, including one former senator, Mike Gravel of Alaska, who once read the Pentagon Papers into the Congressional Record and did all sorts of interesting stuff in Washington, but who more recently is perhaps best remembered for his long, zen, otherwise inexplicable campaign ads when he briefly ran for president in 2008. But lest you assume that former Senator Mike Gravel and company are doing this fake hearing thing because they believe in aliens visiting Earth, the organizers of the fake UFOs hearing told Roll Call, quote, I don't care what the ex-members actually think about extraterrestrial issues. The organizer said he only cares, quote, that they served in Congress, that they know how it is done, that they are willing to run these hearings like an actual hearing in order to create a rather amazing and, I think, important event. Also, I should note that the fake committee members are going to get paid $20,000 a pop to do it. So there's that. Roll Call in the Washington Post this week reporting that the whole fake hearing adventure is expected to cost over $600,000, including the $20,000 fee paid to each of the former members of Congress who's going to preside over the fake hearing. Nobody knows who the anonymous donor is who's footing the bill, but it is somebody rich enough to put up $600,000 to pay for a fake congressional hearing about UFOs. and it is someone of the mindset that a fake congressional hearing about UFOs is what America needs in order to see the light about UFOs. The eerie, eerie, oddly compelling light. Watch this face.
Okay. That was pretty good. Pretty good. Now, today, as we have been every day, focusing on one of the witnesses from the citizens' hearing, today we're going to focus on Dr. Roger Lear. And his bio is not available on the website, so I'm going to go ahead and launch you right into this video. Dr. Lear has been... This is what I have on him. Dr. Roger K. Lear is one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. In this special session, he will reveal scientific proof that we are not alone. Dr. Lear is a I can't pronounce it. He is a surgeon. I'm going to leave it there. In private practice for the last 43 years and has written numerous books, including The Aliens and the Scalpel, UFO Crash in Brazil, and Casebook Alien Implants. This doctor's been very busy over the years removing implants from those who had been inducted. So let's see what he has to say. I'm going to take you into a couple minutes into his start.
If I told you that TBS had a brand new series called Who Gets the Last Laugh about famous personalities who play pranks on...
It appears is what's going on here is a very...
Okay, 1 second.
It's a wonderful trip to Egypt, and the date is May the 5th through the 17th. George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM. Very possibly it will be there broadcasting live. So if you can make it and you want more information, there's only 25 people that are going to be allowed to go. So please find out more about it. I'd like to thank Bob Brown and the UFO Congress for giving me the opportunity to do this presentation today. I'm going to present some new material that... you have not heard about before, and this is based on the 15th surgery that we've done for removal of alien implants. We'll simply call this case file SC0010908, and if I can work this machine, we'll go on. Now, the patient has been using a pseudonym. His name is John Smith. He's 47 years old, and he is married with three children. He resides in Southern California, and his occupation just happens to be a physical scientist. So very strange things involved in this case. He has a positive alien abduction history, and as you know, ANS research has a very strict set of protocols and criteria that we use before any surgery is performed. And John fulfilled all the criteria and protocols and became the 15th case. The area of concern here is the second toe of the left foot. We had x-rays taken, and they showed a metallic foreign body measuring about 4 millimeters in length and about the thickness of a pencil lead. And as you know, in the other cases, we've seen about the same thing. So we have a number of these, at least 8 or 9, which all look the same and have the same essential qualities. What's unusual, another thing that's unusual about this case is when we did the scientific study of what we have here, we find it's sort of an embodiment of all the other 14 cases. If you've been following my research as it's been going, if you go way, way back to the first and second cases, and we had laboratory data coming from Los Alamos National Laboratories and from New Mexico Tech. If you remember, they didn't know what these samples were. This was a blind study, and they came back with a conclusion that these are a meteorite-like samples. And as you know, people don't step on meteorites or whack them with their hand. Otherwise, they'd have a very big hole, and probably not much material would be embedded in it. Once the X-rays are taken, then we know that there's an object there. We use a CAT scan, and the CAT scan will give us the approximation of where the object lies, and we're able to then do the surgery more specifically. I told you it was about 3 to 5 millimeters. It's radio dense. That means that it appears in an X-ray about the thickness of a pencil lead, second toe again. Estimated date of insertion was February the 28th of 2008. And how do we know that? Well, the individual remembers waking up in the morning, and he saw a couple of drops of blood on the bed sheets, and he looked down at the toe, and there was a couple of small puncture wounds, which healed within a very short time. As with the other cases, again, there was no scar and no portal of entry available. Also, if you recall, before we take anything out, we like to find out as much information as possible as to what's going on. And as we're able to do that and get better and better equipment, we're able to get much more knowledge. And as you recall, one of the cases we did was emanating a radio frequency, which was verified by a friend of mine in Las Vegas, let's put it that way, who sent me a classified FCC sheet. And we found out that that frequency was broadcasting on a deep space radio frequency. Now, if that don't knock your socks off, I don't know what does. We have emissions coming from this last case, too. We use a Gauss meter to detect the electromagnetic activity, and we found that we had a magnetic field of greater than 10 milligauss. Ionizing radiation, we were only able to detect the normal background radiation using a Geiger counter. And the radio emissions, again, where it's 14.749650 megahertz. I don't know yet. I haven't had enough time to find out exactly where on the band or where that is going, but we're finding out. We had emissions of RF and ELF and in the microwave bands. Also, you may have been told, but we're offering everyone that comes to the conference, and it's least within the sound of my voice, if anybody's here or not in the room but are at the conference and you talk to them and you feel maybe they might have an implant of something and of whatever, and they would like to know more about it, we have a very expensive $90,000 piece of equipment sitting right outside the door here with Open Minds. Open Minds also is a new entity that's coming about, and it's going to serve as a purpose of a clearinghouse for physical evidence and other things in the UFO field. It's going to be a marvelous organization, and it's headed by one John Rayo. So you'll meet him out there. Anybody that wants to be scanned, you don't have to undress. You can just come as you are and stand in front of the antenna, and we'll tell you what time is on your radio control watch. So that'll be right after my presentation, right outside the door in the back of the room. I will go on here. The surgery date was September the 6th, 2008, and in time, looking at total time, that was not long ago. I was used a, although it's in the foot, I use sometimes a general surgeon because my time I find is better spent sort of as a surgical director because this was being filmed for a production that was supposed to appear on the A&E channel. So I'll go into a little divergence about that. It was an excellent program, and we had it in our contract that there would be no debunkers and no skeptics. Things would be told, and the scientific data would be told up to date of the findings. They had a couple of focus groups that came in and looked at the hour pilot. This was going to be a series, and the series was to be called Alien Intent. They looked at the series, and they came up with a bunch of real weird stuff and said they would only pick up the show if it had debunkers and skeptics in it, and we said no. I will never, ever intentionally again, and I try and do the best that I can to prevent this from happening. I've done numerous television shows. One is still playing. A lot of the shows that you see on television and even those done by respectable groups will bring in things. They will. There's a very clever thing going on. The people who are doing the show will debunk themselves. So you may have seen some stuff that's recently on TV which have two outcomes. No conclusion or it's not real. So be very leery of what you see on TV, but I'm trying to place myself in a category where if a program appears on TV, unless it's purely entertainment and they want me to entertain, the knowledge that you're getting will have no debunkers and no skeptics. So as on this case, I serve as an assistant surgeon. The anesthesia is a local. We use two mixed anesthesias and just to put the area to sleep. We have stills and video that record the surgery going on, of which I'm going to show you some actual surgery footage. So I hope you've digested your lunch. We use assistive X-ray devices, as I've talked about before. You're going to see that in some of the slides. It's called the C-arm, and it has a sender and a receiver, and then what you're seeing appears on two television screens. You're actually able to see an instrument being inserted, and you're able to find the object a lot quicker. We have multiple witnesses who are viewing this either on TV or live, and then they sign forms stating that they were there. Now, the specimen appeared, when you looked at it as on an X-ray, as a solid unit. But yet when we went to remove it, it came out in multiple fragments. It was quite brittle in nature, and it sort of came apart. And the fragments, as in the other cases, were surrounded by this very strange type of biological coating, which we've been finding with some of the other objects. The fragments were all placed on a surgical drape, which you will see, and I had to very carefully pick these fragments up and put them in the specimen container, which contains the patient's own blood serum. One of the photos here is the device that we use for the detection of radio waves. And we did that as well as using the Gauss meter. Here you'll see some filming going on. And also you'll recognize one of the individuals there as Whitley Strieber. A couple of pictures. I'm pointing to the object on the television screens that that is part of the C-arm apparatus. This may be a little hard to see, but there is an object right here. And That's the object that we removed. Here's some actual surgery going on. This is material which has blood on it and a few pieces of the specimen. Here's the specimen container. It contains blood serum and has a bit of the sample on it. Now, we'll just diverge for a moment. What we like to do is we like to check as many things as possible. And this case was so interesting, I couldn't help but want to present you this material, which is the first time anybody is ever hearing this. You're going to get a lot of information, which you've never heard before. This is the first time a breakthrough. So I just hope you realize how lucky you are to be a part of this. A client's home is a single-story dwelling. Its exterior construction is a plaster over chicken wire and usual type of wrapping. Interior is plaster over wallboard. There's a number of magnetic anomalies we found. The exterior of the master bedroom wall above and below, but mainly below the window, showed some magnetic properties. A backyard soil was highly magnetic with a large magnetic field exceeding 10 milligauss, and the soil also spontaneously catches fire. We took samples and had some soil analysis done and found that the soil has an extremely high bromine content. He had a fiberglass boat that was in the driveway, and the fiberglass was also highly magnetic, which I don't know how that can happen. There was anomalies also of a Cadillac automobile that the individual drives. The interior of the house had numerous magnetic anomalies. All the utensils in the kitchen drawers, including things that absolutely should not be magnetic, such as, those wooden salad serving forks and spoons and other utensils that were either plastic or made of wood. They are not supposed to be magnetic. They were the kitchen cupboard hinges were highly magnetic, and some of them contained only one pole of the magnet. Unipoles are not supposed to exist, but evidently they do. The non-metallic kitchen counters also were magnetic. The interior master bedroom wall, again around the windows and confluent areas, which we found on the outside, was also magnetic. I hope you can see this. This is a drawing of the house, and it indicates areas of a large amount of magnetism. There was a avocado tree that was growing in the backyard, and we set the Gauss meter on a limb of the avocado tree, and it pegged the Gauss meter at 10 milligauss. Now, if you've ever seen an avocado tree that was magnetic, please get in touch with me at once. I would hate to eat the fruit off of that tree and have it stick to the metallic buttons on my shirt or something like that. Have a taco. They wouldn't want to make guacamole out of that, I think. All right. Now, in addition to this, we were able to dim the lights in the bedroom, and using three different frequencies of ultraviolet light, we found, again, this is the first time, so enjoy it. It's for real. There's a picture of it. I hope you can see it. We found two small childlike handprints on the wall, which were phosphorescing, and they only have four fingers. I don't have any friends that have four fingers that I know of. Here's another one. Look carefully. We've got this now. We took out the piece of the wall, and we're going to try and get DNA off of this. There's a new device that's been invented, and it's a tape, and you can put the tape over something that you're trying to get DNA and you peel the tape off, and you can send this tape into a laboratory and you can get the DNA. So we're very interested in seeing what the outcome, but just the photograph alone, which occurs in a house where abductions have been going on, and then you find two four-fingered small handprints on the wall, I think is a pretty interesting finding. 48 hours, here's another weirdo. 48 hours after the surgical specimen was placed in a sealed container, I went to check on it. All the little pieces that we had taken out, I told you the object broke into a number of fragments, all the little pieces became a darker color. And they not only became a darker color, but when you lifted up the specimen container, they began to rearrange themselves in the order of which we saw in the X-ray. Now, I called the cameraman, and we had him come down and immediately take a video of that. Never seen anything like that before. We're working on possible explanations why this happened. Okay, now this is going to be a video, I think. If I can find the cursor. Here we go. This should work. There we go. Okay, get ready. I'm going to shut up. Watch the surgery. If you feel bad, then you'll find a bag in the seat in front of you. Pocket. Pull it out. You'll know what to do.
So, what I plan to do is just make a small neck and go hide the guy.
Yeah. Okay.
And see if we can actually be lucky.
They're showing is I jumped ahead a little bit because that sound from the surgery is so loud. What they're showing is that they had in the tweezers inside the bone, inside the toe, they were retrieving the device that was implanted, and just before they released it from inside the flesh and brought it to the outside, it disappeared. Completely disappeared.
Out here, after my last suture goes on, if we see anything in there. I mean, you saw one little tiny speck. I thought we didn't get quite all of it. But I don't see anything now. Well, it looks clear. I don't see anything left. I think we got it all out of there. So we're going to put a little pressure on your tongue here. I'm gonna have you done with it. Take care of it. Very carefully. All these little pieces out here. Can you look at what you're talking about?
Yeah,
I'm
going to shoot
here, there,
little bit,
little tiny,
tiny. But
I put them all right in this area.
Okay.
This is a very unusual way to do it.
What we did was we took these little pieces, placed them on the sterile drape, and then you'll see cutting a piece off of the sterile drape, and then we take that into the lab, and from there I very gently took these little pieces out and put them in this vial of blood secretion.
Okay, Dr. Hold that up to the camera and kind of tell us what's contained in it. So, sir, can you step over for me? Paul? Thank you. Hold on a second, sir.
And I never go into any of these
trees. These spots here that we're looking at are very small pieces of tissue.
No matter how strange it would appear, or you can assume it to be, it could always be something rather mundane, and we've had that experience before.
So where is this going to head up to now?
Well, depending upon when I get out of here, we'll have to determine whether we have enough to send to pathology or whether it should go directly to metallurgy. So we need to get an SEM done, which will look at both the soft tissue and metal.
Can I help you? So I want to go through this.
I want to get it so we can put it in the vial. So
okay, that's enough of that. Everybody see that okay? Everybody all right? I'd ask you for a show of hands, but I can't see a doggone thing up here. Okay, let's go to the testing. We performed a number of tests, and as you realize, what I told you before, we've spoken, we look at the object, and we look at the outside first, and then we begin to look in. So we do some optical microscopy and get to see what the thing looks like with some magnification, and then we do SEMs, which is a scanning electron microscopy, and EDX, which is X-ray dispersive X-rays, and that tells us what the object is basically made out of as far as the elements are concerned. These are a couple of the graphs using what's called Raman spectroscopy. And it begins to give us clues into what we are looking at. Now, analytical tests showed the following. We showed trace element patterns which were consistent with meteoric origin. All the way back, remember I told you in the beginning, back to the first two cases. We're all the way back to that again. And we look at the nickel-iron ratio in these, and the nickel-iron ratio appears to fit in the meteoric category. Now, what someone has done, some entity or something, looks like they're using a meteoric iron mixed with some other rare elements to make an object, to put together an object with a specific function. Now, in addition, there are a number of things that we found. I told you about the nickel-iron ratio. We found some minor elements in the sample. Some of them are listed here. These are very strange elements to find in somebody's foot. You just usually don't find these sort of things. Now, in addition to this, we have testing which shows that there's biological material which is either growing out from the metal or into the metal. We don't know yet, but we're doing more testing and more data. This is mind-blowing enough, especially when you look at the last one here, which is uranium and the only isotope of uranium that was found was U-238, which is very difficult to find in nature existing by itself. So in toto, what we have here is something that's most unusual. This is not the end of the science, but I wanted to present this material to the public for the first time, and I chose the UFO Congress to do this. There are going to be many more more tests that are going to be done, and if we can get them done in time in toto, we want all the I's dotted, we want all the T's crossed, we don't want there to be any concern. And what we're going to do is we're going to use controls, which consist of perhaps a piece of steel and an actual meteorite fragment, and we'll be able to compare these and say, this is what we have, this is what's in a nickel iron meteorite, this is what's in a piece of steel, and these, you know, apparently are not things that come from here. Now, there's some other significant things that we found in the sample. There may be things like inclusions, and I told you before, if you've listened to me speak, that some of the testing that was done at the University of Toronto in Canada showed that there were very interesting spheres or ovoids, and other material that was found in the samples at the University of Toronto, including in this particular sample, we not only found those confluent with what we found in the at the University of Toronto Material Science Department, but we've also found inclusions which appear to be sodium chloride crystals that are rectangular in various sizes. And you say, oh, what does that mean? Well, think back. Remember, is there anybody here that's old enough to remember a crystal set? If you raise your hands, I'll try and see. Yeah, a few people. The old radio was a crystal set. And what did you use to get a radio program? You used the crystal, you know, and a battery and a copper coil and a set of earphones, and lo and behold, you got a radio show. The early days of radio. So crystals must have some meaning, and perhaps that meaning is being used by entities from somewhere else or intelligences from somewhere else that know how to use the atomic structure of the elements that we have here in this solar system, or maybe some other solar system, or maybe some other distant galaxy. Who knows? But they're able to put things together in, yes, you could say, a manufactured way, as we consider manufacturing. So they can put things together that can use these basic materials for a very specific purpose. And that has appeared, that appears is what's going on here, is a very, very complex, excuse me, very complex form of nanotechnology. And as you know, our nanotechnological development is occurring as we speak. Now, I want to make just one other statement. They say I have 9 minutes left. There's a wonderful clock up here now. It's all a modernization. You see, we have colored lights and all this modern equipment. It's just wonderful.
Okay. You get the idea. So there are some very, very interesting witnesses in a wide range of issues that they covered. There are several other witnesses I'm exploring to present to you, and they're the ones from the other countries, and their YouTubes are in Spanish, Italian, and I'm having trouble bringing a good video that you'll be able to understand the words to. these ones I know mostly speak English, but not on their YouTubes, because the YouTubes are covering some presentations they did, and they did it in their native tongue. So, what I'd like to share with you next is last night I presented my class, Making Contact with Extraterrestrials for World Peace, and there was a small number of us, and it was very, I think it was very well received. It turned out well. And one of the things I had shared last night was the importance of integrating mantra into our daily lives, because the basic seed sounds that are found in, for an example, Sanskrit mantras, when we say them or sing them, they change the nature of our bodies directly. They change us and evolve us on ascension with, you know, with no effort on our parts. And what it does is it invokes the energies of light and love to permeate our bodies. And it's a practice that you can add to your daily routine, which will speed up your abilities for telepathy and going out of body and these sort of things. And I strongly recommend it. I want to share one of the mantras that I use every day. And then after that, what I'd like to do is do a meditation with you. We're going to do the rainbow meditation today. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy this. Thank you. Okay. It's such a beautiful song. That's available at paranautum.org. The whole album is available for purchase, and it's what I use every day. Let's join together now and do a meditation, everybody. Thank you.
Greetings, everybody. This is Beth from Galactic Roundtable. We are doing a rainbow guided meditation. Relax in the usual manner, sitting comfortably in a chair, feet on the floor, your back straight, hands loosely in your lap. Focus on the rhythm of your breathing for a few moments and feel your body relax more with each outgoing breath as you release all the tensions and stresses of the day. Close your eyes gently and imagine before you a most beautiful rainbow. Observe the brilliance and clarity of the colors as they vibrate before you. Now, allow one of these colors to become brighter and more noticeable, and gently place it above your head. Yes, you can do that. This may be your favorite color or not. Try not to analyze why this color presents itself to you. As your color vibrates above your head, visualize it turning into a liquid light which is slowly flowing down towards you. Now, let the color flow into your head. It is a good and comfortable feeling, soothing and healing, bringing much peacefulness. Feel it flow through your head and face, easing all nerves and cells it touches. Allow yourself to enjoy the peaceful feeling it brings as it washes away all tightness and tension in your face. Your whole head is filled with the radiant aura of your color. Now let the color wash down through your neck, into your shoulders and arms. It is getting brighter and richer as it moves and flows through your body. Feel the aliveness of this energy in your upper body. Feel it move and circulate through your inner organs, leaving them fresh and vibrant and healthy. This is a very powerful yet gentle energy which quietly fills all your muscles and cells. It is now cascading through your abdomen and hips and flowing down into your legs. Imagine your legs to be open channels filled with the circulating power of your color. It is an easy, light, and satisfied feeling that has washed away any stress you started with, leaving you fresh, free, and open. Finally, let the liquid light flow out through the bottom of your feet, as though you are providing an outlet for the light to continue flowing. You are a channel filled with light. Every part of you is open and breathing peacefully. Now, something remarkable is happening. As the light pours out of your feet, it is returning to the top of your head, recycling itself in a marvelous circle of light, which has one purpose only: to bring healing energy to your body and mind, affecting you on every level. Let it happen. Experience all it brings you. Slowly let your friend, your color, begin to leave you. It has done its work well. Gradually feel it leaving your head, your shoulders, your torso, abdomen, and back. Finally departing from your hips and gently leaving your legs. Let it pour out of your feet and see it return to the ocean of rainbow light. Slowly become aware of your surroundings again, bringing with you the powerful energy you have experienced.
All right, everybody, that's going to wrap it up today. Thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you tomorrow. Namaste.